My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock. And I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, the thing is, I want to learn. And as it turns out, I work with people who know a lot about classical music. Every week on this show, one of my coworkers will give me a homework assignment, a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the Classical Classroom. Hello, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and today my teacher will be Classical 91.7 Senior Recording Engineer, host of music from the movies, and, most importantly for our purposes today, composer Brad Sales. Brad, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Daisha. Great to be here.
So this is the first time on the Classical Classroom that we've got a living, breathing composer in our midst. I know. Look, there it is. Evidence of being aliveness. And we've got you here trapped in the studio, no escape. We're going to make you talk about your work. And I'm pretty excited about it because I really am fascinated by the creative process. So why don't you introduce some of what we'll be listening to today, and then we'll listen to a little bit before we get started.
Well, I wanted to talk about just composition in general, and the way especially I like to do it. There are multiple types of composers throughout, composers of classical music, composers of jazz, composers of rock. I mean, there are composers everywhere, but then when just the subgenre of classical music itself, there are so many different types of variations that you can think of as a composer. And so I just fit in one little aspect of it, and that's what I wanted to talk about with you today. And I'm a thematic composer. And I've tried to break away a little bit from that because I like to try to develop themes to where they go to their potential. Mm-hmm. Let's say, because when you just write a tune, the tune can die off pretty quickly, and if it has nowhere else to go, then it's just the tune and it just happened. But if you can find the possibilities within that tune, that's when magic can happen, and that's mm-hmm. when things can break away.
Okay, so get really specific about that. What do you mean by taking something apart and developing it and making it, sort of?
Well, let me give you a couple of examples. Like I wrote a piece called The Buffalo Bayou Suite.
Yeah.
And there I wanted a thematic motive that was going to be the voice of the river.
Okay.
So I had this idea of, okay, what was going to be the voice of the Buffalo Bayou? And this is how it went.
All right, So talk about what's happening here.
Okay, I'm setting up what my theme is going to be here. Here it comes. That's the voice of the river. That's what I've kind of thought of as the overall picture. That's the river's tune, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've established kind of a theme. That da-dee-da-da-dee-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so that is just the regular tune. Now, where can I go with that? The people who commissioned this piece wanted to show the beauty of the river, which was that. But then the river goes through some turmoil, pollution times, risk of being modified, cemented in and all that. And so there was more destruction that was going to happen with the river. So when I take it to this next level here, what I wanted to do was start that theme and give it a more of a darker twist to it. So this is where I set this up. And you hear moments of that first theme. Here it comes. But see, it's just a little fragment. So just a little fragment. Then I can peel it away and start finding notes in between there that really give it a more of a tense feel.
Yeah.
So that was the second part where it was kind of mysterious. And then the next part in that where I wanted to have the minor and the major kind of clashing together with that same theme is this. So all those notes that are happening in between are notes that don't exist in the original theme, but here
right.
it comes.
Yeah.
hear that? And then all these kind of question and answer, that's actually tonally the same theme, but it doesn't sound as happy as it did the first time I played it for you. Now here we go, we're expanding it, peeling it away, finding moments within that theme to really express what I'm trying to express, which is this this demise of the river, this pollution of the river. Mm-hmm. So then I take all those different variations, but what I had in my head was not any of those. One was simple, one was dark, but what I had in my vision was a grand statement of that theme. And what I chose to do was in the last movement, the movement was a rebirth of the river. So new life is breathed into the river. The same thing comes back. And then you have this, though, stated in the solo violin now. Adding colors to it as it flows through, kind of new flowing sounds.
Tributaries.
There you go. But this is more of a development here. So it's unlike what you heard before, but that's expansion again. Now here we go, we build it up. Development, pulling it out. And so what we have there is the full realization of the theme, but it doesn't come to the very end of the piece. Mm-hmm. And you, by orchestration, you can develop a crescendo, kind of like Bolero did, Ravel did with Bolero, where you just orchestrally with the colors build it and build it. Because if you just ask the violin to play louder and louder, you're not going to get that same buildup. And so that's from the beginning to the end, pulling it apart, really seeing how the potential of that one little da-dee-da-da theme that we could do.
As a thematic composer, you're starting with this theme, this core, and then you're in every direction, or every direction that you feel like needs to be expressed in this piece, you're taking it apart, you're adding notes, you're subtracting notes, you're moving in between those notes, and then you're bringing it to its sort of full conclusion. Now, how did you know that you had reached that conclusion, that you had reached the crescendo? Because, I mean, arguably, you know, it could have exploded forever. You know, how did you know when it was done?
You just keep working it until it feels right.
Okay.
I knew the sound I wanted, and I couldn't express it to myself in words. I couldn't even come to grips with it in my mind. But I had like 18 revisions of that third, of that last section I just played you, because I didn't know. It's one of those types of pieces that could keep going and going forever. But I wanted this one big sigh, this big statement that said, "I have returned. I am redeemed," that kind of sound. And that's
you felt like you like reached that culmination, and then it was.
Yeah. But this is about 10% inspiration and 90% perspiration.
As most creativity is.
Yeah. And that, I mean, so, you know, it's pretty easy to come up with a theme, and that theme is not mind blowing. It's a very simple theme, but what you do with it and how you structure it and how you let people know that you've gone on a journey, you've started here, you've taken them somewhere, and to come back and have a realization that, okay, I've been somewhere with this. Now when I hear it again, I know this piece more. I understand it.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I try to get out of the composition.
What kind of creative person are you? I tend to be the kind of person who is sitting in my car and I have an idea and I have to like pull over or talk to myself until I get home so I don't forget, and then I have to go home and write it. And then I know some people who are just really disciplined, and they get up at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning every day, and they just, whether they're inspired or not, they just sort of hammer it out. So how do you do it?
For me, a lot of times I'm trying to tell a story, and I know the story I want to tell. So the inspiration doesn't come bam like that to me. In fact, this, you know, trying to figure out this main theme and all that was a daunting task, just because which combinations of notes do I want, making sure you haven't heard it before. But I don't like to pre-plan a lot of my music, because I feel that that takes out a lot of the organic sense of it. Mm-hmm. There are some things that require pre-planning. When you do film music, when you do commissioned works that are specific, rigid time frames or whatever else, you know, you have to have some planning.
Yeah.
But like a piece that you write for a concert that has, that's just merely exists for its own sake, I don't like to pre-plan. So I sit down and I'll jot some things down, but I don't let those be concrete. I don't play them over and over again. So I believe that that's it. I'll write something down and continue on. As I go through the piece, I'll think, okay, you know what? That was wrong now. Let me go back. And I don't fall in love with anything I have done until a shape starts appearing.
Yeah.
Once the shape starts appearing, maybe I'll move a note here and there, but I like to keep it very flowing, very organic.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way, because once I've gotten that core idea, then I can come back to something over and over again in that sort of more disciplined manner. But the initial jolt doesn't ever come out of some sort of, structure or effort. That's, to me, like, I don't know, it's never been born out of effort.
Really?
Yeah, so more, it just sort of inspired, calms. Yeah.
Yeah. How nice. I wish, can I have some of that, please?
Well, but it makes for a very, very erratic, I'm never a very consistent producer of work, because I do wait for those moments. And when those moments come, awesome, then I will produce for days, you know, short stories all over the place and what have you. Then there are dry spells like crazy.
You know, there's nothing more intimidating when you sit down at a piano with a blank sheet of paper.
Oh, yeah.
Write your name. Mm-hmm. Write the title of the piece. Measure one. Yeah. I need to go get some coffee.
Yeah.
Okay, let me stretch a little bit. Okay. You know, mm-hmm. Once you get your starting point, whatever it is, it mm-hmm. may be something that you never even use again, or that you need to put away and use for something else. Yeah. I've written half a piece that I've scrapped and saved for another piece and redid, but it got me started so I could write the piece I was writing.
Got you over that initial, like, blank page moment.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I never throw away anything I've written.
Oh, that's smart.
You know, you never do, because you never know when it's going to come back.
Right. So I want to talk about Contrasts, which is it's a chamber work that you did, and it's written for alto sax and piano. So first of all, why did you choose alto sax and piano?
Well, the alto sax... This whole piece has a very deep meaning for me. I'm a saxophone player.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And it was the first time I was actually able to write a piece for an instrument that I'm intimately familiar with. Mm-hmm. I know everything that the alto sax can do. And I had this is the first movement we're listening to, with Valerie Vidal on saxophone and Scott Halswasser on piano. Like, that little lick there is an old David Sanborn lick that he used to do back in the 90s. It's called Venting. I loved it. I used to do that all through high school.
I like that.
Every single thing in this piece is something about me. You know, just something that I've done or something I've remembered about the saxophone. But the saxophone is very much like the human voice. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, the two marry very well together. It's very rhythmic.
Yeah. Yeah, you can make it say whatever you want, the sax.
People that were at the premiere of this didn't know a saxophone could do this. They always thought of it to be jazz and, you know,
an improvisation.
And I wanted this thing to be very flowing. This piece started out as a one-movement piece that was actually the second movement. It was called a lullaby. And I wanted to write a piece for saxophone piano to honor a friend of mine who I went to high school with, who had passed away due to complications, health complications. And but before he died, he and his wife had a son, my son's age. And so I wanted to write for his son a lullaby about a dream that would take him into a dream world where he would go and see his father for one more time. And I wrote this piece, and I thought, okay, that's about all I was going to write. And then I met Valerie, and she played another piece of mine for saxophone, voice, and piano. And I really liked how she played, so I decided to finish out and write three more movements for it, and calling it Contrasts. In fact, the third movement is a tango. And it's the reason why it's a tango is because she specifically requested a tango.
I was wondering where that came from.
She's of Argentine descent, and so she wanted to show that off. Yeah.
Why the title Contrast?
Because they were specifically four contrasting styles of music.
Okay.
Everything is completely different. One doesn't tie into the other. There's no thematic material that goes from one movement to the next, like it did, say, in my Buffalo Bayou Suite.
Yeah.
They could be four pieces that stand alone by itself.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe it's just the fact that it's alto, sax, and piano all the way through. There's that. That is the thing that sort of connects them all.
Yeah. Now we heard the opening to the first movement. Mm-hmm. What I do, I had the intro, which is material that actually is just, I don't want to say throwaway, but it's intro material. You never see it again. It's just made to introduce the first movement. Then you heard the rhythmic da 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 da. Well, then I contrast within that movement the B section of that piece, and it goes something like this. This is us coming out of it to the B section. Slow it down. And what that is that's the da 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 da, very, very slow.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Cool.
So, when you write something very rhythmic, very fast-paced, you need a moment to just reflect on the piece and give the listener a break from all that rhythmic contrast that's going on, and let it go up to a climax again. But the hardest thing is then how do you get out of this when you're writing? This is in an ABA form, so you know we have the A section, which is the rhythmic stuff. The B, which is this, what we're listening to right now, then we have to get back to the A section. This is how I do it. There we go.
Cool.
And now we're back
That's
into
cool.
it.
Oh, yeah. That's yeah. neat.
And so it all sounds familiar somehow to it because it's all based on those same kind of idea of taking one thematic part and pulling it apart.
Yeah.
I think about my film score from 2004 was Echoes of Innocence. Mm-hmm. And I had a violin, cello, and piano. And so when I composed this, I wanted to have a two voices working in a dialogue, because the scene was about a man and a woman. The man comes back after being gone for so long, and it's a reunion. But she's very timid about it at first until it's revealed who he is and that she does still love him, and then they want to be together. And so this is how it started out with piano. And again, it's very thematic. This is recorded in a different way than you would for a concert. This is very much a film style. The closeness. You want it very intimate. You can think of a conversation going on right here.
Yeah.
Now the violin comes in. Here they look at each other. and she realizes who he is. And this theme here is the old childhood theme, because they knew each other as children. So when he's revealing to him, I am the person that you remember a long time ago. So composing a piece like this is very much thinking about the film, the audience, how it's going to sound on film, how it's going to be mixed on film, what kind of sound do I want. I'm thinking about that as well as trying to compose a piece that's going to be emotionally correct for the scene.
Right. So you're generally speaking a thematic composer, but you draw inspiration from your own life. When you're commissioned for a work, you're clearly trying to fulfill the terms of, you know, what that group wants for you to do. When you're doing scores for movies, you're, you know, trying to capture the mood and the essence of what's going on in the scene. Who are your musical inspirations? What composers do you go to? What do you listen to? What do you like?
One of my favorite pieces is Bizet's The Pearl Fishers. It's an opera. And I love the duet. It's a two male vocal duet, Enfant du Temple Saint. I think I'm probably butchering the title because I'm not an announcer in that regards. But I love how that piece is structured. I've also as a kid in high school, I would crank up, when most people were cranking up rock music, I would crank up Antonin Dvorak's Symphony No. 9 from the New World. Nice. Loved Holst, The Planets. I was never really a big Mozart fan. I learned to appreciate Mozart in my college days. And then in the film music world, you know, the obvious number one person is John Williams, but you have another composer, which was had a neat sound. His name was Michael Nyman, and he's a film composer, but he's also a concert composer, and he's a minimalist composer, and creates sonic sound. So I started getting an idea.
What movies has he done?
He did the piano. That's really he was known for doing the piano. I'm sure he's done a few others, but they just escape me right now. But he's done some string quartets, and he's done a whole bunch of stuff. And he very minimalist, has a cool sound, in the score of the piano, it was sometimes it was piano, very traditional, but then sometimes he had like a barry sax or an alto sax doing sax quartet doing some stuff, and really neat stuff. So I try to draw my inspirations from so many different places, because I, as a kid, I used to just listen to John Williams, Dvorak, Holst, you know, all that, and that was it. And I, my earlier stuff was all just trying to copy that. Then obviously I listened to Copland, and he very much inspired me. There are some sounds of Copland in my Buffalo Bayou suite. But, you know, I try to keep expanding and keep learning new composers. You know, John Adams is a great one to latch on to. Camille Saint-Saëns. For like my Buffalo Bayou suite, I drew a lot of inspiration from Bedřich Smetana's The Moldau, which is about a river that flows through, and how he grab that flowing sound, the rippling sound. So, you know, and Ravel and Debussy for their impressionistic sounds. They're you know, it's almost like pastel colors is what I think. You know, so I try to grab all that, and I've written pieces to emulate it so I can learn it, but then I never consciously want to emulate it because it's theirs. It's, you know, that'd be ridiculous. You got to find your own voice. And so my own voice, like you said, I'm a thematic composer. Even if I'm not writing something that doesn't need a story, I have to put a story in my head. Mm-hmm. I have to think of something I want to say so I can have that shape, that development, that full arch.
Well, this has been so cool. When I think about classical music, I am such a novice. You know, I don't know where any of it comes from. So it's been so cool to get to talk to somebody who actually puts these notes together and see, you know, how the mind of a classical music composer works.
Still trying to figure out how my mind works. I don't know. But I appreciate this so much. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, Brad, thanks so much for being here today. Everybody, thanks for tuning in to the Classical Classroom, and we'll catch you next time.